You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Tuesday. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. As always, I am one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News, and over at 8.9 seconds. And today, I have a new mic. I don't know if you can notice any sound quality stuff, but it has one of those like screen things, and I guess it'll only pick up my voice and not all the sounds of my room, which is this giant AC unit. We have a central AC thing in my apartment that's super loud, but I'm struggling to get it the perfect volume I want, so if I'm too quiet or too loud, let me know tomorrow on Twitter, at TEastNBA. Today, though, no game to talk about yesterday or tomorrow. For the first time in like a month, it seems like they've played every other day, or a back-to-back. But speaking of playing a lot, we are going to talk about load management later. I do want to go more in-depth on their most recent game against Denver this weekend. And then the Mad Ant season ended. Wow, that was a blurb. Ended on Saturday. So we're going to talk about the Mad Ants. I know we don't get to talk about the Mad Ants enough, but they had a season. They did not finish in the playoffs for the first time in a couple years. So let's talk about the Mad Ants. It'll be fun. But first, Denver. What a game. Me and Adam kind of not glossed over it. That's wrong, because it was a big deal. You know, they went on this road trip. They sucked, including a loss to Denver that they choked away at the free throw line at the end of the second quarter. So to get them back, and so convincingly, nearly 40 points was huge, especially because the Celtics lost the same night. So they're now two games up on Boston. And the Sixers just lost to the Magic like 2 seconds before I started recording. So they caught some games up in the standings. Now, they're not going to catch Philly, I don't think, for third, but getting that half game on Boston, or that full game by the end of the day, is huge, especially against a team that's good. So big win in that way. And then we're not talking enough about, or me and Adam did not talk enough about, how good Bojan was in this game. 10 for 10 to start the game is, like, absurdly good. The perfect quarter was only 21 shots total, right? So 21 shots is basically a quarter of basketball. So essentially, for an entire team, half quarter, Bojan did not miss a shot. And I know that's like a weird way of thinking about what he did, but that's what happened. He just couldn't miss, and it was not like a normal way for him to score. Like, four of them were threes, but only one was off the dribble. It was at the buzzer of the shot clock. All the rest were like he got set up, and then the six of his makes were these off-the-dribble beauties where Gary Harris just looked like made Bojan look like he was like Oscar Robertson or Magic Johnson or something. He just like blew by him and got to the rim, and then it was like an uncontested layup for Bojan, who like has been good at that stuff all year, but man, he looked unstoppable in this game. Finished with 35. He finally missed his fifth three-point attempt. Was his first miss in the second quarter. Finished the game 13 for 16, and now Bojan is up to 17.9 points per game this season, 42nd in the entire NBA, which doesn't sound like a lot, but like that's really good. 42nd is really good. And 21.3 per game since Vic went down, which is like top 30. So he has figured out, and the Pacers have figured out, that this guy can really score and really help the team succeed. And like, I know we know that. We've talked about it all season long. It's just been so impressive to see it night in and night out. Is like, finally, this guy has something figured out, has the Pacers alive, basically. Like, if he doesn't step up, they score six less points per game, and they're doofed. So another huge night for him has been awesome, especially because he was kind of dishing it out, three assists and no turnovers. I know three assists also isn't much, but for Bojan and his scoring-focused ways, that's a good game to me. Miles Turner, good again, especially guarding Jokic, who is everything for the Nuggets. He shot 50%, which is, like, fine, but you can live with that from Jokic, and like his stat line looks amazing, but Turner did a pretty good job containing him in general. If you ask me, the Nuggets did not do well getting to the rim and getting good shots at the rim. Paul Millsap, whenever he got switched away and got on Turner, did not do well. He played a fantastic defensive and pretty good offensive game with 17 points and 11 rebounds of himself. And like I said with Adam yesterday, it was a rare game where I like felt his rebounding. You know, the whole time I was like, yes, I can, like, Turner got the rebound. I was like, oh, there's Turner again. I never feel like I say, like, again, look at him on the board. Another thing I noticed in this game that was big time, Wesley Matthews has been, a great three-point shooter, really good defender, but kind of a one-trick pony when he gets the ball, in that he will catch and then do a hard dribble, or he'll like shot fake and then do a hard dribble to the right and forward and then jump back behind the line, and if the shot's not there, he'll give it up or take a contested three, which, okay, that's like, he's good at it. I can live with that shot, but it's not great, and it's really predictable. In this game, for some reason, finally he was able to beat some guys off the dribble. He was getting into the lane. Will Barton could not contain him at all. Will Barton is tiny for a three. So that, you know, West fueled that. He got inside. He broke the defense down. He's been in the league for almost 10 years. He knows that the passes are there. He had 5 assists, which I should have this in front of me, but I don't. Has got to be his highest with the Pacers so far, at least close to it, which was awesome. That really helped the offense get going, because without Darren Collison, they don't have that reliable breakdown, the defense guy in the starting five, especially because Corey Joseph continues to just struggle so much on offense. 4 steals, though. Kojo was great on D, but 1 for 4 from the field. He just cannot put the ball on the rim, and it's so bizarre. He's never gone through a stretch, I think, this bad in his whole career. I mean, I could be wrong, but it's just been crazy. On the bench, Sabonis, 15 and 13, 7 for 13 from the field, and only 22 minutes to get 15 and 13. It's just insane. Mason Plumlee, who to me is a very good player and plays a lot like Sabonis. Sabonis is like a better version of Mason Plumlee, which is hilarious because he's younger. Sabonis ate his lunch, bullied him for his dinner money too. It was great. Tyreek played the third good game in a row with 11 points, 5 rebounds, and 3 assists, and was 5 for 9 from the field, which we need to see more of that from him, because we just do. Like me and Adam talked about yesterday, that could be a guy that is huge in the playoffs for this team. And to me, the rhythm player stuff, I've said a lot about it myself. Even with DC back, I really am curious how they're going to play that, because it's hard to get him the ball so much when there's all these other guys you have to feed, and McDermott's rounding into form, and Holiday's looking okay. It's like, how are you going to get Tyreek these rhythm touches that he needs? And maybe you can take the ball to Joseph's hands a little, especially with his offensive slump, but that's not going to help him get out of it. So I don't know what the right answer is, but I think Tyreek needs to keep this groove rolling. I think that's very important. And McDermott, in Banker's life, missed all his threes. So another normal McDermott game, which is funny to me now at this point that he just can't. It's like the weirdest thing ever that he can't make threes at home. But yeah, this game was a dominant performance on both ends. The defense was sensational. I talked about Turner, but Thad Young was awesome on Paul Millsap as well. Gary Harris was really the only guy who was a threat, and he's a play finisher more so than a play creator. So, I mean, if he kills you, that means someone else was killing you. But Jamal Murray, 2 for 12, because Corey Joseph was just smothering him. Monte Morris, the assist to turnover guy, only had 1 assist. Was 6 for 13 himself. Their bench just couldn't make a thing. Outside of Monte Morris, they had 4 total makes from their bench. Malik Beasley with 1, Torrey Craig with 1, and 2 from Jared Vanderbilt. Kind of in garbage time. So they really got nothing going from their bench at all, and that was where the Pacers pulled away. 20 plus 20 for McDermott in 18 minutes. When he was on the floor, they were getting some good stuff going on. And Wes Matthews put the second unit a decent bit with Tyreek at the 1. He was great with this game, plus 25. That was a team high. So complete team performance, really needed it. Really needed to see it as they head into these final 8 games, 2 ahead of Boston. Really, if they beat Boston once, they're guaranteed to be 2 ahead with 6 games to go, which gives them a fair bit of wiggle room. So that means if they beat Boston once, they only have to win 4 other games to at least tie them. But they don't think they're going to have the tiebreaker. It's going to be really close. But Boston is 29 and 15 against the East, and the Pacers are 30 and 15 against the East. And every game Boston has the rest of the way is against the East. And the Pacers have that one Thunder game. So if Boston wins out, they get the tiebreaker. And if they split the season series, but they still end up tied, that means that Boston did better against the East down the stretch. So that means they would win it too because of this one Thunder game. So it's just like the way it's set up means that the Celtics have to lose at least one non-Pacers game for the Pacers to have a shot at the tiebreaker or have it move to the next one. I'll talk more about that at a later date, though. Let's talk about load management, a hot-button topic around Pacer fandom. Caitlin Cooper wrote about it. Ben Gibson wrote about it. Mark Monteith wrote about it. And I'm going to use Mark's piece specifically because he actually talked to the team and is very plugged in. So let's take a quick break and then talk about load management. It's weird. Load management's weird. Like, I want to say it's rest. It's called rest. But the other day I had a friend text me this and say, Tony, what is the difference between load management and rest? I said, what? Aren't they the same thing? Is it one just a euphemism for the other. He said for the Warriors, DeMarcus Cousins was not playing due to load management, and Andre Iguodala was not playing because of rest. So clearly there's a difference. Irrelevant to what I'm about to say, I just want to figure out what the difference between load management and rest is, because they both to me feel like you've been playing a lot and we don't want you to play a lot anymore. Anyway, so the Pacers were talking about load management for a hot second when they came back from this road trip and everybody was gassed and they sucked and the Warriors blew them out of the gym. And Nate said that there was a discussion, and according to Mark Monteith, the exact phrasing he has is, Nate McMillan approached three of his veteran players on Saturday to take their pulse on taking a Sunday off, a Sunday in which the Pacers were going to play Denver. It was Bojan, Thad, and Kojo were the three guys he said that to. They all said no. They were going to play. They want to clinch the home court before they rest. They obviously, they're just competitors. Like, all three of those guys played 80-plus games last year. Mark notes that, too. That's a huge deal. I don't think Bojan has missed a game willingly in his entire life. That dude is such a competitor. Thad Young, we know, is such a competitor. Kojo scraps like hell on defense. So they want to clinch home court and not do load management. Now, I think there is some – I can't think of a good word for this. I think load management isn't the worst idea ever. Like, I think home court is important because an extra home game in a series that you're probably not going to be favored in is a big deal, and Boston's good, and that stuff matters, but it's like, how important is it really compared to guaranteeing full strength, full health, everything? And I think it might take you out of a rhythm, which is a risk, but I think health is super valuable at this point in time. So there is a balance there that I struggle to find the perfect answer for. But like, to me, if Bojan's going to be even a smidge tired in the playoffs, like, you should sit him. It just like, you, I'd rather be the five seed with Bojan ready to go, than any other way around. And like, to me, he's the most important guy here. Him and Thad the same way. Thad rested the last game of the season last year when they were near their seed. So maybe there is some validity to it. Kaylin Cooper also wrote about it. She is just the best at all these takes. But, I mean, she said that they should have considered the Warriors game for rest, because then you're only playing a game in a week, basically. You play Tuesday, you play that one game off, you take that game off, you play against Denver, and then you have Oklahoma City on Wednesday. So, basically, in 7 days, you only play one game. I agree, that would have been the game to do it. Too late, they didn't do it. And now, if you're not going to do it then, now that you have this two-game lead over Boston, you can't anymore. And I don't think the OKC game is a good time for it, unless the Celtics like flounder again before then. But it's really hard to toe the line. Caitlin did a good job of listing out why that's so hard and listing all the options and why guys are tired. It's fantastic. Just read everything she puts out. That should be the slogan of Locked On Pacers. Read everything Kaylin Cooper writes. But for load management, I think it's just a tough line to toe of do we need the four seed or do we need health more. But I mean, obviously, both is an option, but it's a tough option to get at this point in time. So we'll have to see how the chase goes. I think they're just going to play everybody till they clinch/don't clinch the four for sure. If they win that first Boston game in Boston, maybe we'll start to see it in the games that they think they can win without their best players. But we'll have to see. They should have more depth, though, behind some of those guys because the Mad Ant season is over, which I will talk about in a second and how that gives the Pacers depth. So stick around for one more break and we will talk about the Mad Ant season and how its end actually is a good thing for the Pacers. So the Mad Ants are done. The Mad Ants in the G League only play 50 games. It's only like early November to mid-March. Then the playoffs start. But the Mad Ants went 23-27, were four games shy of making it this year. So they're not in. Their season ended on Saturday, which is a huge bummer. The last 7 years, this is only their second time not in the playoffs. They won that championship in 2013, so it's a bummer to see them not in the playoffs. They clearly have some good stuff going on up there. It kind of was weird for them because they had six NBAers ultimately on their team this year between Ben Moore, Sumner, Alize, Hicks, Stephon Hicks. Remember, he got that 10-day with the Pacers a long forever ago. Devon Reed and EK. That's 10 guys who split time between the both teams, and that makes it a little bit harder to establish like the perfect G League rotation with these guys that, you know, might get called up like Hicks, and it makes it a little harder to succeed, especially with guys who are trying to earn a spot in the league and, you know, need to get good rhythm to score well. So they only had four guys playing over 80% of their games. Hicks was one of them. Rob Gray from Houston, whose Cougars are killing it in the NCAA tournament right now. He's a pretty good player. I would not be surprised if he got the 10-day next year. Write that down because I predicted Hicks this year. So, yes, let's be on the lookout for that. Omari Johnson played all 50. He was on the Pacers preseason squad. If you recall, he played for the Grizzlies last year. Knockdown three-point shooter, allegedly, in the NBA last year. Only shot 36% this year, but he took 7 a game, which is a ton. Maybe he gets another NBA shot because he can still shoot. And the other one was Demetrius Denzel Dyson, who they signed just for his G League rights before the season. Denzel Dyson shot 42.2% from three, so he was a sneakily good role player for them. The pro guys, so the Madden season being over is good for the Pacers. I said that before the break. I'll explain that now before we talk a little bit more about the Madden themselves. Once the G League season is over, like, the two-way contract calendar doesn't matter anymore. Devon Reed, it doesn't matter how many pro days he has. He can be with the Pacers the entire rest of the season on his two-way. He'll be on the bench every game. He'll be at every practice. That's great. Being with the NBA coaches every time is great for your development, which is fantastic for him because he wasn't awesome. He was pretty good for the Suns last year. I think he brings a lot to the table in terms of defensive capabilities, and he's just, like, good enough at a lot of stuff, but he only shot 39.8% in the G League. His shot is pretty raw, so he's got a decent way to go. I think being with the pro shooting coaches and the Pacers coaches all the time will be a big deal for him. And then everyone else on a pro deal, which at this point is just Sumner, Alizé, are the other two. They can be with the team the rest of the way, no problem. They were on a full deal anyway. Now, they were getting playing time in Fort Wayne, which they weren't going to get with the Pacers, although they blew out the Nuggets, so they both touched the floor. But, you know, getting that working with the pro coaches versus the playing time, I don't know what the right balance is, but they're getting now full-time work with the pro coaches, which is super exciting for those guys. And another thing is, with Johnson and Sumner, should it somehow come to this, it shouldn't. They're both playoff eligible because they are on the Pacers roster as of March 1st and didn't switch teams and are not on a two-way. So Reed is not, but those two are. So that's pretty cool that they're up with the team. In the G League, though, like, I like the way the Pacers use the Mad Ants. In that they, you know, they're not afraid to send guys down for playing time. Leaf went there last year. EK was there forever. Ben Moore was there forever. Like, they needed it. And they look okay in the pros because of this time. Sumner especially, you know, got the confidence on defense from his time in Fort Wayne. And he was a really good scorer. Alizé, you know, we learned that he could rebound and particularly do everything on the floor from his time in Fort Wayne. EK really polished his defensive skills. Alex Poitras last year showed that he could be an alpha dog. He's thriving for the Hawks this season now. It's like the way the Pacers use the Mad Ants as a development team, and credit Steve Ganzi and the Mad Ants coaching staff for this, is they just are really good at getting guys to develop their asset skills. You know, they get better at the things they're already good at, which is huge because that's how you can become an effective player, is be really good at something on the floor. And they did a good job with that this year. Sumner specifically, I feel like, had a great year down in Fort Wayne. 22.1 points per game is just crazy stuff. And he didn't have the ball in his hands like so much, but he did take 17 shots. Still, shooting the three well. And in the pros, that hasn't translated yet, but he like has been noticeably jittery. Not that that's an excuse. That is clearly a problem. But I think if he gets over the jitters, he showed that he can be a play finisher. Also, four dimes per game is nice. Pretty solid, or at least decent or better shooting splits. 1.7 steals. So Sumner showed off a lot of skills down low that are down in the G League that he can translate with him up to the pros. Alizé Johnson, similar. We've heard about this all year, but like 19.2 points, 13.7 rebounds. That is crazy stuff. 38% three-point shooter, 51% from the field. He was a complete behemoth. he's really raw, and I think that his G League stats are great. You know, he's showing he's better than a lot of the guys who are in the G League, which means he has got a shot in the pros. Like, the reason he's a two-year deal. It's tough for him because of his position and the guys that are in front of him on the Pacers. It's also tough for him because, you know, he played at JUCO and then Missouri State. He hasn't had this level of coaching ever. This is his first time with guys who can really harness and get the most out of him. So it might take him a sec to get all to put all that together. But I think he's going to be a good player someday. I really believe in that guy. And then Devon Reed, the other Pacer, finished with 14 points a game, six rebounds, three assists. He's more known for his defense, 1.4 steals in a game. He's a solid little player. I don't think the Pacers will keep him because I think he'll search for a minimum deal somewhere. I'm not sure he'll get it. But only 2 years of service. We can get another two-way if he's willing to come back on that He's talked about paying his dues before. He really is. He played a ton in the G League, 34 games. Good for him, though, to get that development in. The Suns, he are not the greatest organization to develop. As for other guys who could get called up, I talked about Rob Gray, 17.1 points per game, decently efficient. He played it in a lot of games. He showed that he's a good player. They drafted him in the G League draft last year. I don't know exactly how that works, but they were able to get him. Hicks, who got the call up, 15.4 points per game and 7 rebounds. So he's like this really tall guard. Exciting for him to be get the 10-day. He didn't get to touch the floor, but still cool. And then EK, unfortunately, waived. And he had more than $50,000 guaranteed, so he couldn't be re-signed by the Mad Ants this year. And he was hurt when he got waived, so no one claimed him. So he's just kind of floating around rehabbing in Indy these days. But he was 11 points, 10 rebounds, and 2 blocks guy. And he was known for that those blocks. So hopefully that's something that can make him a useful NBA player someday. But I don't think he ever has a shot. He's just too raw on offense. But, yeah, the Mad Ants are done. Oh, there it is. I wonder if you'll be able to hear that fan kicking on at the end of the show. Let me know. If not, this screen thing that came with the mic is useless. But, yeah, I just want to talk about the Mad Ants season being over. It's a bummer they didn't make the playoffs, but a lot of roster turnover from all those. And they had some. And I talked about EK. They had some other injuries and all those guys going up to the pros. It makes it really hard for a team to establish any rhythm. So they'll be better next year. They have a great organization. It'll be great. But thank you guys for tuning in. Tomorrow we'll talk Thunder. Hopefully I'll have a Thunder guest on, which will be great. And some other stuff. So stick around for that. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you tomorrow.